The Burt Cohen Show, Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
It's the Burt Cohen Show. Magic of history, making America. What is America all about? What should our foreign policy be? What are we telling our neighbors? And do we have a foreign policy that's really serving our interests? Well, we've often talked about South and Central America as being our backyard, which I think is kind of presumptive now, isn't it? Do they consider us their backyard? I don't know. But there's been something that has existed, for quite some time, a tool that is owned by the United States. It used to be called the School of Americas. Now it's called something else. I'm not sure exactly what the title is, but it's something that's going on in Fort Benning near Columbus, Georgia. And there's it has been always controversial. It comes out of the Cold War, the School of the Americas does, and a lot of people think it's not doing such good things for the people of Latin America, or for the United States for that matter. And there is an action plan coming up pretty soon. There's always been protests around the School for the Americas, and there's something called School of the Americas Watch. And with us today on the Burt Cohen Show, our guest is Becca Polk, youth organizer at School of the Americas Watch. Thanks very much for being with us today. And what is, I know the letters of the new facility are WHINSEC. What is its new name?
Thanks, Burt, for having me on. The new name is Western Hemispheric Institute for Security and Cooperation.
Uh-huh.
And it, you know, it switched names from the School of Americas in 2001 due to much grassroots pressure to call for an end to the operations coming out of the SOA.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of, you know, we won a vote in Congress to close the school, but what ended up happening is they just changed the name and kind of had a little bit of a makeover, where they added a couple of human rights classes. But they still kept the general same curriculum of subjects like counterinsurgency, infantry tactics, military intelligence, counter-narcotics operations, and commando operations.
Well, at the Defense Department website, the new facility, WINSEC, I guess it's known as, they say it provides professional education and training for civilian, military, and law enforcement students from nations throughout the Western Hemisphere. In other words, it's a combat training center for Latin American soldiers. And supporters say the Institute has carried out a mission they consider crucial to national security, under fire of false accusations and leftist propaganda. What's your reaction to that?
Well, Lee Riles is their PR person for the School of Americas, now WINSEC. And, you know, they've done a really good job of kind of boosting up the name of WINSEC, trying to, counter the arguments coming out. But really, the masses of Latin America, the people, everyone, the 99% are saying that this school and these military soldiers coming out of this school are, like, attacking their own communities when they come back to places like Colombia, where the School of America's graduates have been, like, charged with participating with paramilitary groups, you know, supporting corporations, kind of seeing people coming together in communities as their enemy. And that's exactly what they've been trained to do at the School of Americas. They've been trained to see kind of any union leaders, for example, who are fighting for better wages as the enemy, as the like corporate enemy. And so it's really interesting that the School of Americas was first started in 1946 in Panama. And in 1984, the Panama president of the time said, you know, this school has to go. We don't want it in our land. It's the biggest destabilizing force throughout Latin America. And it was moved to Columbus, Georgia, in Fort Benning, where it's still held today. And one of the reasons was is that this place was seen as, you know, the quote-unquote middle-class community that, you know, kind of thrived the American dream and promoted capitalist corporation and, like, consumerism. And so not only are these soldiers coming to the U.S. to learn military tactics, but they're also coming to learn the quote-unquote American way of life. So they go back to their communities and they have a stronger allegiance to this consumerism, which is one of the reasons I believe that they've been so complicit in supporting corporate control over indigenous lands.
And wow, that you said a lot there that I'd like to explore. We're talking with Becca Polk, youth organizer at School for the American School of the Americas Watch. What corporate interests have been involved of late, and what has been their legacy in Latin American nations? I don't know if you can provide us with any specifics on that.
Yeah, I mean, Coca-Cola, for example, there's a great campaign, Stop Killer Coke, and unionists in Colombia have one of the highest, union leaders in Colombia have one of the highest, assassination rates through corporations like Coca-Cola. There's also Drummond Corporation, which is the Canadian mining corporation that's out of Colombia. I know that Chiquita Banana has also had ties to paramilitaries in Colombia. And the thing is that the School of Americas was the beginning of the ideology of training soldiers from Latin America, but it's really spread beyond that.
What do you mean?
Because graduates of the School of Americas are now teaching soldiers in their own countries. So it's really hard to trace the actual effects, but we know that where grad soldiers and police forces are in highest numbers at the School of Americas is also where the U.S. sends the most military aid. So it's kind of like this mutual partnership. Someone the other day asked me, well, why would countries send their soldiers to the School of Americas? Mm-hmm. And I believe that's part of it, this kind of bonding between the elites of different countries to keep control. And the SOA is one piece of that military muscle that enhances capitalism on a global scale.
So how would students from these countries like Colombia, Panama, of course, which used to be part of Colombia till we, the United States, broke it off for corporate interests to build the Panama Canal, but how do soldiers get picked, or students, I should say, get picked to go to the School of the Americas?
Well, soldiers, they're already part of the military in their countries.
Okay.
And so I'm not exactly sure how, depending on how many, quota, I guess, they need to fill at the School of Americas per country. I know that, like I said, that there is the correlation between military aid and military support with the number of students who attend the School of Americas.
And I did want to get back. You talked about Killer Coke. So Coca-Cola in Colombia, there have been indications, at least, that they have been tied to anti-union violence?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, under Uribe, which was the president, the previous president in Colombia, there have been allocations and also proven connections between people in Uribe's government and paramilitary forces and corporations. So Uribe himself hasn't been tried in court, but there's a lot of human rights activists who are working to make that possible. And Uribe actually came to D.C. last year to teach at Georgetown, and through human rights organizers and people from Colombia who are now in D.C., there was a big campaign called the Adios Uribe Coalition that was educating the public of the links between Uribe, the paramilitaries, and corporations. And we successfully got his contract not renewed to teach at Columbia anymore. So there's a lot of, and that was mostly the Drummond Corporation, which I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and what do they do?
Corporation out of Canada.
Uh-huh. What does Drummond do? I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, it's a mining mining corporation.
Well, interesting. I wonder how they look at places like Bolivia, which has is very, very rich in natural resources. And Evo Morales, who is at least part indigenous population in Bolivia, has basically said, nah, we want some of the wealth for ourselves. And I wonder if there's been any activity between the School of the Americas, now called WINSEC, and Bolivia. They must be rather frustrated having somebody, thumbing their noses at American corporations. Have they been involved, to your knowledge, in Bolivia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the most notorious dictators, Hugo Banzar of Bolivia, was one of the top notorious SOA graduates who kind of similar stories, went back and massacres in communities, especially indigenous people in Bolivia for lands. But that Bolivia is now part of the success story as well against in the campaign against the School of Americas, because Bolivia is one of the countries that have pulled their troops from who have stopped sending troops to the School of Americas, along with Venezuela and Argentina and Uruguay. Also, Costa Rica had pulled their police force. Costa Rica doesn't have an army,
right. But
they have a police force. They had pulled their police force, but we found out through WikiLeaks that they actually secretly, under State Department pressure, started sending police back to School of Americas.
I wonder what pressure that was from. And tell us about School of America's watch. Did it start with a fairly significant event in history in 1989? And perhaps you could tell us a little bit of the SOAW history.
Sure, yeah. The first vigil to close the SOA was November 1990. That was 1 year after the SOA graduate-led massacre of 14-year-old Selena Ramos and her mother, Elba, and six Jesuit priests in El Salvador. A small group of people of faith came together for the first vigil in 1990, including Father Roy Bourgeois, who's been the founder of the SOA Watch movement since. And the movement started off with small vigils, fasts. There was a great action where Father Roy and a couple other people went into the school's Hall of Fame and threw red paint all over it in a symbolic act to show the blood that was coming from the School of Americas. But since that, this will be the 21st year that we're gathering at the gates, and we've ranged in numbers to 10,000, 20,000, at the end of the 90s. And since the attacks on 9/11, there has been a kind of a stronger pushback against the movement. One of the things that made the movement so strong was the massive civil disobedience that occurred at the gates of Fort Benning, where thousands of people would walk onto the base and risk federal arrest. But after 9/11, there's now a six-month federal charge that is possible when you cross onto the base. And each year, it seems like they put up another barbed wire fence. So now there's three or four barbed wire fences blocking the SOA Watch vigil and protest from actually, the line of Fort Benning base. But people still are pushing through that in civil disobedience to be able to cross onto the fence and kind of speak truth to the crimes that the SOA has committed by risking up to 6 months in federal prison.
That is quite a disincentive to getting arrested, 6 months in prison. But this massacre that happened in 1989 in El Salvador, was it, I know this was, it made tremendous world news. It was clearly just these jeeps, I believe it was, or vehicles were traveling and they got stopped, and it was just a huge massacre. And this direct, unquestionable link with the School of the Americas, is that right?
Yeah, I don't have the exact numbers, but I think I know that a Human Rights Watch report came out of the human rights abuses in El Salvador during the Civil War, and
right.
almost two-thirds were implicated as graduates of the School of Americas.
Wow.
And yeah, there was another big massacre that was led by graduates of the School of Americas. Mozarte massacre, where 900 civilians in El Salvador were killed, mostly children. SOA grads are also responsible for the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero.
Wow.
No. Also the killing of 8 members of the San Jose de Apartado. It's a peace community in Colombia in 2005. And most recently, they also overthrew democratically elected President Zelaya in Honduras June of 2009.
I wanted to talk.
So it's a lot of people say, you know, oh, well, this is something that has happened in the past. But one of the reasons that we have so much data and information from events that have happened in the past is that another way that the State Department and the Pentagon have tried to dampen the SOA Watch organizing is in 2005 they stopped releasing the names of graduates.
Oh.
They actually, through a Freedom of Information Act, they still send us a list of how many of the countries, but the names of the actual soldiers that are sent to the School of Americas are blacked out. So we can no longer trace the graduates of the school. Follow what they do after they go back to their own communities, which is one of our biggest arguments against the School of Americas, is that they say with the name change, it was about accountability and transparency.
Right.
But we ask, do they follow the graduates of the School of Americas? And they have admitted that once someone graduates from the School of Americas, they're no longer traced. So there's no way to know, even if, you know, what the PR says about SOA is true or not, they don't know.
And what, if you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here, we're talking with Becca Polk, youth organizer at School of the Americas Watch. What do they teach there? What goes on there? There was some training manual that came out back in, I think it was 1996, that was somewhat controversial. What kind of things are people learning there that our tax dollars are paying for?
Yeah, what was released in 1996, the Pentagon released it, but with much grassroots pressure as well.
Yes.
These manuals that equated to torture and kind of this way of controlling the people through the barrel of a gun.
Yeah.
You know, the military might that is not unique to the SOA. This is the doctrine of our U.S. military in general, is that you can control populations through war, through military might. So that's the exact same thing that people are learning at the SOA. And they're learning that in a way that, again, is not accountable to the school. When they go back to their communities, they are free to do, you know, things that they learn can be manipulated, and yeah, just the fact that so many of the School of America's graduates have participated in coups, have been some of the most horrendous dictators throughout Latin America, you know, have been charged with massacres, it's a really exciting time right now because so many different, I guess, like lawyers and human rights advocates have been filing reports against School of America's graduates. And so in Peru, we're seeing these cases finally being taken to court. Same within Guatemala. We're finally seeing these cases in court. And, you know, once the problem, the struggle has been getting them to court. Once it's in court, most likely the graduates will be implicated in the murders because there's so many ties linking them to that.
And there's something coming up real soon, November 18th through 20th. There's a new action. Tell us about what's going to be going on then and some of the interesting people that are going to be involved there.
Sure, yeah. Well, this year, we're really, our major focus, we'll be meeting in Columbus, Georgia on Friday, November 18th to Sunday, November 20th. And the events are really exciting throughout the weekend. We're starting off with supporting a rally and a vigil at the Stewart Detention Center, which is run by CCA Corporations. Oh my gosh, I forgot what it's called. But it's one of the largest immigrant detention centers, privately owned in the U.S.
Huh.
And so we're starting off there with supporting Georgia Detention Watch's rally and vigil at the Stewart Detention Center, which is in Lumpkin, Georgia. It's about 45 minutes away from SOA. And then we'll be there will be speakers. You know, the main focus of the event is on families and what how detention centers tear apart families. So there will be a lot of speakers of people who have either been detained in Stewart Detention Center or have family members who are detained there currently.
How would the people end up in that detention center? What kind of legal process would they go through, and where are they from?
Well, the people who are in this center usually haven't had any legal process yet. They can be held from 6 months to over a year without any legal process. What's happening right now is with the anti-immigration laws in Georgia and in Alabama and in Arizona, and also like secure communities, 287G, all these different ways to pick up that our immigration enforcement is trying to pick up people without papers who are undocumented in this country. And it's this part of this program to get the worst of the worst criminals. And what we find is that people who are being picked up are fathers, their mothers, their people who came to this country who had to flee civil wars in their own country, you know. So this year at the SOA Watch Vigil, we're really trying to focus in on the connection between migration, forced migration, and militarization. Because we know that a lot of people in this country are here because of U.S. militarism or because of U.S. economic policies in their own countries. And they come here, and through our unjust immigration system, there's no way for them to have political refugee
status.
And so they're being picked up. It's people who are driving without a license. What some of these anti-immigration laws do is they have the local police forces working with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Oh, right.
And so, yeah, it's causing communities to be so fearful of the police. People aren't calling in domestic violence. Children are afraid to talk to the police. It's really tearing up communities, and it's not effective for building the country that we want to see.
And this is connected with the School of the Americas, yes?
Yeah, I mean, most of the, a lot of people, you know, El Salvador, we talked about it previously,
right.
That two-thirds of the graduates, two-thirds of those cited for human rights abuses during the Civil War were SOA graduates. And so we see a big population of El Salvadorians who fled here during the 80s to escape this violence in their country. And also, you know, the School of America's Watch is really taking on a strong importance of immigrant rights in this country, because we see militarization in Latin America directly connected to militarization in this country, and the communities that are being most affected by this militarization are communities of color, are poor communities in this country, mostly immigrant communities.
Interesting. On the next Bert Cohen show, we'll be talking about the militarization of domestic police in the United States. And I understand, you know, Americans, including myself, love celebrities, and Martin Sheen is going to be there. What has he been involved with this before, and are there other Hollywood types?
Martin Sheen will probably be our only Hollywood type, unless you consider Roy a Hollywood type, Father Roy.
Well, he's a fairly big deal. That's true. Father Roy Bourgeois, he's the guy that that really started the thing. And he's a Jesuit priest, is that right?
A Marinal.
Marinal. What?
Yeah.
Well, it was a lot of priests and nuns have been the victims of graduates of this School of the Americas, for sure. And
we're really excited to have Martin Sheen with us this year. He has been a big supporter. He actually has participated in civil disobedience at the SOA, at the SOA Watch Vigil. And we have so many other amazing speakers coming in from all parts of the world, pretty much. But Mario Joseph, who is a human rights lawyer in Haiti, is coming in. He'll be speaking from the stage, and he'll also be having a workshop. We have Luther Castillo from Honduras, who's part of the popular resistance in Honduras, which, again, was an SOA grad-led coup that happened in 2009.
Right.
That has, we've seen hundreds of people being assassinated since then, who are community organizers, students, teachers, anyone who's kind of standing up and saying, like, we don't want this military repression in our community, is the target of military violence.
Well, I was just going to ask, is this connected with any Occupy movements across the United States now?
Yeah. Many people who are participating in Occupy movements in their own communities are also coming to the vigil. So we will, on Saturday at 4 o'clock, we will have a general assembly at the gates of Fort Benning to kind of connect local organizers, local Occupy organizers, and share stories of what's happening in each person, in each one's communities. But I think on a larger scale, it's really exciting that this Occupy movement is starting, and just to be able to draw the connections to the economic policies that are now being turned within the empire, that have been kind of forced throughout, especially Latin America and Africa during the 80s, 70s and 80s and 90s, when these countries were first becoming quote-unquote democracies after colonization or after years of U.S.-backed dictatorships, in order for them to pay back their debt of during those times, the IMF and World Bank were doing what they call structural adjustments.
Mm.
Was really meaning privatization of everything. It was, you know, and these things have still been going on, and we're seeing, and cutting of social services, you know. And we're seeing that now happen in this country. It's been happening in this country, but the masses of people are feeling it for the first time. And so really making those connections of this isn't something that's just happening in your community, it's happening around the world, and how, like, the global system has failed the people.
Yeah, it seems like people are becoming more aware that, hey, there's a few corporate powers that basically have, they kind of owned Washington and owned policymaking for quite some time, and our government has been at their service. And this is part of it. It may not necessarily be the best for the common good of the people of the United States. Now, we'd like to have good relations with the people of the developing world in Central and South America. And, you know, you would think for the good of the economy, theirs is ours, if there are more people working and having jobs, they can buy more stuff and won't be as drawn to come to America and be, you know, illegal immigrants here if the economy is working for them there. The School of the Americas, the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, aren't they, isn't that sort of one of their goals, to help the economies of those regions and help, you know, stabilize them and keep them out of the hands of, well, it used to be communists, and now I guess they call them some other sort of terrorists?
Yeah, there's always been different justifications for the school, and throughout different years you see that justification simply changing names from communism to drug trafficking,
right.
Now narco-terrorism. And the thing is that without military strength, economic policies cannot be forced on other countries. And we see a big problem that trade can happen for economic goods across borders without any, without any blocks. But people are not allowed to cross their borders. You know, we don't believe that anyone is illegal because we're all people. And some people might have documents, some people might not. But also, like, the lands that the U.S. is inhabiting now is not technically, does not belong to the U.S. You know, they're still through so many different wars and so many different, conquering of land. This land, you know, we could say that no one is here legally on this, on North America. So I think it's a really important concept that we continue to bring up of why should goods be able to pass U.S. goods, and it's very unilateral.
Right.
U.S. goods can go to Mexico through free trade of NAFTA, but Mexican goods cannot come here. And also the people are considered under that same embargo in a way. And so it's very problematic that, after NAFTA, all small farmers and small businesses in Mexico have been wiped out. And it's also really impacted small businesses and small farmers here in the U.S. because it's put mass production as the best, and
more
mass
efficient
production of corn gets subsidies. So
right.
That means the corn is cheaper, more people will buy that corn in the markets. But really, I mean, to bring it back to the SOA, these things could not be happening if there wasn't a military presence within these communities that they're trying to force these economic policies onto.
Because a lot of the people aren't calling for that. I wonder how often there's any kind of vote or request of the people of, say, Guatemala or Honduras for intervention by the U.S. Somehow I doubt that happens very often.
I don't think so either.
And which brings up 2009 in Honduras, when there was a democratically elected government of Manuel Zelaya. Now here we, this 2009, Barack Obama was president. One would hope that there's a significant difference between Reagan and the Bush people and President Obama. Here this happened in 2009. Didn't the people of the developing world in Central and South America look to President Obama to change this policy? And how different is Obama when it comes to the School of the Americas?
Well, actually, in terms of Obama, not just to the School of Americas, but also to Latin American policy in general, Obama can sometimes be worse than Bush. Bush wasn't focusing on Latin America during that time.
That's true.
But, I mean, we, Republican, Democrat, under this political system, there's not much difference in foreign policy.
Mm.
Both support wars, both support free trade, and that's what matters to the people throughout the world. And so, Obama's administration initially didn't call the coup, called it a coup in Honduras, and then the next day changed the wording that they started to use in support of what had happened in the shift in presidency, quote unquote.
Right.
And the thing with Obama is during his campaign, he actually campaigned saying that he was going to close the School of Americas.
Really?
And that hasn't happened. There's a executive order signed by 69 members of Congress that was delivered to Obama.
That letter, yeah.
In September of this year, maybe August, that is calling for Obama an executive order to shut down the School of Americas.
Yeah,
but we haven't heard any comments from the Obama legislation or Obama administration since that executive order has been delivered to Obama?
Well, it was a letter from 69 members, not just Democrats. Of course, you have the old familiar good warriors like Kucinich and Barney Frank on there, but there were some Republicans as well. And I think it's interesting how many Republican presidential wannabes are calling for an end to so-called nation building, which I guess this could go under. And I'm looking at this this letter from the 69 members of Congress to President Obama. It says, in 1999, the U.S. House of Representatives voted by a bipartisan margin to close the SOA. The Pentagon moved the following year to close the SOA one morning, and the very next morning opened the WINSEC, the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, on the same site. And further in the letter, it says it is offensive that an institution ostensibly created to foster democratic values and respect for civil society among Latin American militaries demonstrates such disdain for human rights. And I find it interesting, one of the lines there is that closing the WINSEC, the former School of the Americas, will hardly create a vacuum. What do they mean by that? That it, if it were closed, it wouldn't be a vacuum. What do they mean by that?
Could you repeat that last line?
Oh, yes, that closing the School of the Americas, according to this letter, or urging its closure, would hardly create a vacuum, that there would still be American influence in the area, I guess. And you know, it's not a lot of money, really. We're not. What is? Do you know what the budget for the School of the Americas is? I mean, it's not some huge Defense Department expenditure, and I would think it could be cut. And these guys are saying it wouldn't create a vacuum in American foreign policy towards Central and South America, that we still have a policy there. So nothing has been heard from the White House on this letter.
No.
That's amazing.
I think the thing that we have to keep in mind with lobbying and with legislation work is that some of our allies in Congress are just that. They're allies in Congress. They're not necessarily supporting the full push of what we would ask for, but they do see the SOA as they do see the connections between human rights abuses and graduates from the SOA, which is really, really important. But they're not necessarily against U.S. foreign policy and domination in a whole in Latin America. So we have to take that into account with any legislative work that we do. Right now we have a current bill that just got introduced, H.R. 3368, which is asking for to suspend operations of the SOA WINSEC pending an investigation of torture manuals and human rights abuses associated with the school. Now, again, we want the school to be shut down forever and not exist, but we also feel that with that wording, more people in Congress will support it because it is once an investigation, we are certain that once an investigation is done by Congress, they will also like see the links between human rights abuses associated with the school and massacres and dictatorships and coups that have happened throughout Latin America.
Yeah, certainly throughout American history of expansionism or spreading democracy, as it's called, there have been people who criticize policies as being ineffective but still favor the overall goal of American hegemony over these developing countries. So certainly, as you say, you know, it can be an ally and not necessarily want to end American imperialism. But the fact that it's not particularly efficient, it's not necessarily helping the cause. If you want to have American domination, when you have assassinations of nuns and priests and kids and you know, overthrows, that's not necessarily the best public relations. And I thought another interesting thing from, I got to read just a little bit from the Department of Defense website, and I'll just read that briefly. It says, closing WINSEC because a very small fraction of the tens of thousands of past attendees of the former SOA were accused and convicted of criminal acts and or human rights abuses would be tantamount to shutting down other universities because those entities may have alumni accused and convicted of criminal activity. It goes on to say, WinSec students seek only to better serve the budding democratic processes and civil-military relationships in their respective countries. Depriving their access would set back or even negate completely efforts to strengthen within the mindsets of the civilian and military leadership of countries in the hemisphere the concept of civilian control of the military, a cornerstone of the democratic government and a vital contributor to regional stability. The Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation will remain open. So they're basically saying it's just a few rotten apples. What's your response to that?
I mean, I think that that argument that it's a few rotten apples is the same as the argument, I think it was Condoleezza Rice saying that there was, of course there were going to be a few children and families killed in the Iraq bombings, but it's worth the price. And, right. You know, I think our challenge now is an ideology shift that needs to happen in this country, that needs to say no one, not one more child is going to die for the hands of U.S. Interventionism, for U.S. to become a stronger, better nation. To bring democracy through the barrel of a gun, that's not democracy. And so I think that what we're advocating for, and we're seeing it happen, you know, the reason that there is such a strong, you know, the reason why the School of America needs to exist, the strong military might and U.S. Presence through Latin America, which is becoming like more complicated and more complicated the more U.S. Can control a country through soldiers that are trained at the SOA. So U.S. soldiers don't have to be on the ground for the U.S. to be in charge of a country. And so it gets really complicated, but there's also such a strong resistance to U.S. imperialism, to U.S. domination throughout Latin America. And we're seeing that in almost every single country right now in South America, with the Bolivarian like revolutions being kind of reignited, and people saying, like, we want sovereignty. We want to control ourselves. We do not want foreign intervention anymore. And so that's kind of the stand that we take, is it's not for us in the U.S. to decide what happens to these countries, whether we think that it should be military or economic policies or whatever it is, that these countries are sovereign nations and that we should act and treat them in that way. The U.S. kind of feels that they can have a presence wherever they want in the entire world. A really great example of that is in the social movement to kick out a U.S. military base in Ecuador.
Tell us about that.
Correa, who is also part of the like leftist president's bloc, I guess, according to the U.S., said, you know, if you let us have a couple of military bases in Miami, we'll let you keep a military base here. So it just, you know, it's this really great example of people saying, ya basta in Latin America, like enough.
Right.
Like enough of you controlling us. It's now our time.
Well, didn't the School of the Americas really come out of American foreign policy, the Cold War, which really began in 1945? And so couldn't it be said that, well, if you're not with us, you're against us. If you're not for, you know, democracy and capitalism, you must be a communist or a terrorist or something like that. Are there people, does it divide up black and white, either you're pro-American or you're anti-American, either you're pro-capitalist or you're pro-communist? Or are these, is some of the resistance not necessarily from the far left in these countries, but, you know, what's, if they have any middle class, trying to fight for that? How does it break down?
Yeah, I think the U.S. would like to pretend that everyone is from the far left that's fighting against U.S. intervention, but we know that's not true. Most of the victims of graduates of the School of America have been peasants, they've been farmers, they've been students, they've been people fighting for the rights of the poor. You know, the U.S. has never supported a government that is fighting for the rights of poor. And right now in Chile, we're seeing this amazing social movement happening with the youth in Chile who are fighting against the neoliberal economic policies that were put in place under the U.S.-backed dictatorship of Pinochet in the 70s.
Thanks.
And these students are middle-class and upper-class students who have said, we do not want to be in debt the rest of our lives in order to go to higher education. So they have been out on the streets for over 6 months now protesting for free education. And the government's tried to make so many different agreements with them, saying, okay, we'll lessen the education, we'll do this, we'll do that. And they're saying, no, until there's free education, we will not get off the streets. And so I think it's really great to not only educate ourselves about what the U.S. government is doing in Latin America, but also what the Latin American, like what people in Latin America are doing to stand up against that. And it's really inspiring. You know, students here in the United States, part of the Occupy Wall Street movement came out of protesting against the student debt. And so to be able to link up struggles with that of students in Chile and students here in the Occupy Wall Street movement is a really incredible historic moment that we're in right now.
What I don't understand is why the government is clinging so much and just refusing to shut down the School of the Americas. We've had, you know, interventions throughout Latin America since, you know, the late 40s, and we overthrew Allende, Kissinger did particularly. And if Henry Kissinger comes to your neighborhood, call the police, would you? We've been able to do these things. The killing of Lumumba in the Congo, Allende in Chile. We haven't required, the School of the Americas to do that. Why does the government cling to that? Is it symbolic? And how is it funded, actually? Is it funded through the Defense Department? And how much does it cost us per year? Two questions.
Yeah. It's about $18 million per year.
Which is not a lot of money, really.
In just the operations of the school. Yeah. And I think it is a very symbolic place. I think it's the only military training school that is in Spanish only for people coming from Latin America. And it is, again, that idea of... that the U.S. kind of controls the region. And it's, unfortunately, throughout Latin America, it's seen as a prestige to be sent to the School of Americas when you're in the military. And when you have little other economic opportunities to take care of your family, this kind of expedites your career within the militaries. So I think for, the U.S. not wanting to close down this school, I think it is very symbolic. I think that the School of America's Watch movement is one of the largest grassroots movements in the U.S. And so if the school was shut down, that would be a huge victory for people all across the world. And so I think also people who are advocating for the School of America's really do believe that, that this is the right thing to do, you know, and when I talk to people, they just have no idea what the reality is on the ground in Latin America. They have only talked to people who are part of the military, and again, that's that idea of the elites working together across the world, the militaries working together across the world, but like, where does the say of the people, where does do the 99% get an opinion about what happens in their own communities? That's the problem.
Sounds like these United States themselves. Who gets to run the show? Is it the 1% or the 99%? We're talking with Becca Polk, Youth Director of School of the Americas Watch. And what does a youth organizer do?
Well, I'm specifically working kind of with, you know, one of the greatest things about the School of Americas Watch movement is that we get so many students from high school and from college that come to the vigil for the first time. It's their first time finding out that the U.S. government is not there to support the needs of their communities, right, like they've been brainwashed throughout the rest of their education. but in fact that it's working directly against them. And so I think that it's an extremely important time in youth lives to kind of have this political education. So what part of what my role within SOA Watch is to get youth working together more to, you know, there's a student youth working group within SOA Watch movement. And like what we're doing there is sharing success stories, sharing organizing that everyone's doing on their campuses, and trying to find ways to work together and to create the world that youth want to see, because youth are the ones that are bringing energy and creativity and kind of that new spark into the movement as we continue to organize.
I can see why they're afraid. What about, you know, we hear a lot about the drug war in Mexico. It's terrible. Don't we need something like the School of the Americas to help train the soldiers there to fight against the drug cartels? I mean, it's pretty bad.
Well, it's interesting. The Zetas, which is Los Zetas, which is one of the largest, strongest drug cartels in Mexico right now, was actually the founding of it. Two-thirds of two-thirds of the people who were part of the forming of Los Zetas was actually trained at the School of Americas. While the U.S. is on the front saying that they're sending militarization to stop the drug war, they've also been complicit in starting the drug war in the first place and continue to benefit off of it as well. You know, if there was no quote-unquote drug war, then all of these military contractors and the military industry that makes so much money off of sending guns to Mexico wouldn't have to exist. Uh-huh. So I think it's tricky when it's that self-relying prophecy in a way.
Wow.
You know, and also the people who are actually being targeted by the the quote-unquote opposition to the drug war are communities who are already victims to the drug war, you know, who are already survivors of, this drug trade, and then are then being repressed even more through the enhanced militarization of Mexico.
Well, so it sounds like the drug war might be a heck of a good business for the drug, for the drug industry as well as the military-industrial complex, really, on both sides. So if young people and us older folks aren't ready to go down to Fort Benning on the November 18th through 20th for the action, I bet there's a lot of things people can do at their campuses and in their communities, and I'm guessing you can tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, this the organizing continues year-round, from doing film screenings to having informational nights at your university, in your communities, within the Occupy movement. It's really important to be doing teach-ins about what, connecting international struggles to the local struggles. And there's ways that if you get in touch with us here at SOA Watch, there's ways that we can send you information to help support teach-ins that you're doing in your communities. Also in April in D.C., we're having, April 11th to the 17th, we're having a direct action training camp for 4 days, as well as, educational events and a big action that will happen in D.C. and lobbying Congress as well. So if you can't make it to Georgia, start making your travel plans to come to D.C. in April. It'll be a really great event. And then just in general, I think calling your Congress people and letting them know that to sign on to the new legislation that's going around in Congress right now, that's the H.R. 3368, and letting your representatives know that their constituents want this school to be closed. They want the school to be investigated, and they don't want, torture and human rights abuses to happen in their name.
And again, SOA Watch is, if you want to travel on that internet?
It's www.soaw.org.
SOAW.org. Well, thanks very much. And I know that there's a lot of, not just, I mean, Democrats and Republicans are kind of split. I would think that there are many Democrats and many Republicans who favor continued imperial policy by the U.S. having hegemony over the world. And there's Democrats and Republicans who think, hey, wait a minute. You know, is this really in America's best interest? Is this the way to, they say on the website there that, you know, that they're promoting, this is the DOD website, promoting civilian control of the military and democratic governments, and that they are big contributors to regional stability. There's a lot of evidence to the contrary, and that it's not just Democrats, and there's a lot of Republicans who are also recognizing that, just for American business sense, this may not be the best way to go. Mm-hmm. Becca Polk, youth organizer of School of the Americas Watch. Again, the website is what?
www.soaw.org.
Pretty easy. Thanks very much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show. I won't be there in Fort Benning, but I imagine it will continue, that this thing is probably not going to shut down anytime in the real near future.
Well, each year that we go down to Georgia, we work to make sure that it's our last.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks very much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Teacher, teach me well. Love to hear from you, Bert at BertCohen.com. Thanks.